Accession number 14582, Reel 6.
Stephen Dale, Reel 6.
It became all very demanding. It's not as far as physical fitness is concerned. We learned new things all the time. We made homemade explosives, burglary, and wireless radio Morse, which never appealed to me greatly. We learned a lot about German army structure, about weapons, our own and the enemy's, and it became clearer and clearer what we were being trained for, although up to that moment the word SOE had never been mentioned. But it became self-evident. It was suggested that we changed our names, and also while at Anderson Manor, we left the Pioneer Corps, which was a great moment in my life. It sounds stupid, but we became members of the Royal Fusiliers. From Anderson Manor, we went to Heathrop Castle forget whether it's Oxfordshire or Gloucestershire, but it doesn't really matter. That was a sort of a holding place where we maintained our state of fitness until we were sent to Italy. And here that I was born Heinz Günther Spanglet, S-P-A-N-G-L-E-T, and I changed my name to Stephen Patrick Dale, D-A-L-E. I chose Dale because it was unobtrusive and insignificant, and that was the guiding principle behind it. Of course, all our papers were reissued in this name, and when we went abroad, I think it was just about the time when the Second Front was opened, that is June 44, we were put on a plane to Gibraltar, where four of us who formed one group and another lot of four who formed another group, boarded a Dakota, which was otherwise populated by officers of field rank, and it was all good, clean fun to be given this sort of first-class treatment, arriving in Gibraltar in the morning to a breakfast, which of a kind we hadn't seen for years and years, with unlimited fruit and eggs and bacon and what have you. In Gibraltar, our priority dropped, and we had to wait for a plane to Algiers, where our priority dropped even further, and we spent about a week at a holding unit, which was very primitive. And we were happy when that was over, and we were flown across the Mediterranean and ended up in a place called Fasano, which is between Bari and Brindisi on the Adriatic coast. Actually, a place was called La Selva di Fasano. It was about 100 meters in altitude higher than Fasano, which was at sea level. And there was always a bit of a breeze up there, which was very pleasant during the summer. We were two groups of four. Mine consisted, apart from myself, of Otto Kaminski, Alan Grant, and Teddy Lees. The other group were Georgie Brand, Jock Rhodes, Fred Warner, and Frank Kelly. we were the first ones to go in, that means we were the first ones to be dropped. And about 3 days before we were due to leave, or 4 days before we were due to leave, I developed a swelling on my foot, and the medical officer at Monopoly, which was the center of our operational unit, called Number One Special Force, made an incision in my foot, but nothing came out, so he sent me to hospital to get the swelling down. Meanwhile, my three companions were dropped in a place called Tramonte de Soto in the Dolomites, or Eastern Dolomites. I was to follow as soon as possible. I followed about 3 weeks later, and it so happens, after having left the plane at an altitude which must have been at least 10,000 feet, judging by the height of the other mountains around us, four of us in the plane, and just before we left Brindisi, Jimmy Bennett, our conducting officer, said to me, "You know, you've got nothing to worry about. These pilots have done great work over Warsaw." They were Polish pilots. Well, after they decanted us from this great height, I changed my mind about the about the efficiency of the Polish pilots. I had a feeling they just wanted to get shot of us as quickly as possible so that they can turn around and go back. There had been a lot of flak over on the way up over Venice. And anyway, we were now coming down, four of us. As I got out of the plane, I was the first one. I could see the other parachutes open above me, but then I lost sight of them, because that's not surprising if you consider the time it took us to float down. There were Peter Priestley, Taggart, whose first name I don't remember, and he had been a German in the German army, an Austrian who had been in the German army, and the fourth one was his Batman. As I landed in what appeared to be the only patch of grass in the dried up riverbed, I saw a light south of where I had landed, and I made my way towards it, and then heard German voices and Italian voices, and I knew I'd been dropped in the wrong place. I used all my field craft, at which we've all become experts, more or less, to get out of there. I made my way up the side of a hill. I spent the night there, and in the morning I could see Germans spread out across the valley, moving northward towards the Plöcken Pass, and firing into any sort of cover or anything that looked suspicious to them. They also had dogs. This meant, for practical purposes, that I could not move into a westerly direction where I knew I was supposed to have been dropped. Also, I knew where I was. It took me a little while to figure it out on my very small-scale map, but I knew I was north of Tolmezzo, in a valley north of Tolmezzo, and therefore had an idea in which direction to go. I couldn't cross the valley to move west towards Tramonte, and I couldn't go south, because south of me was the Udine what's the place called in the Dolomites? Cortina, Udine Cortina Road, and the Tagliamento River. So going north would have meant going away from where I wanted to be. So I decided to stay put and perhaps move eastward in order to avoid the Germans. After a while, I saw Germans moving south towards me on the hillside, and therefore I had no option but to move, to go up the hill, further up the hill and in the easterly direction. And I spent another night on the side of a hill, and the next morning, after I woke up, I could hear voices moving along a path, and I climbed up the bank and hid in order to look along the path. And when I saw two Germans approaching, I ducked back into cover, and in doing so, lost my footing. And I fell down about, I don't know, perhaps 10 feet or something like that. And by the time I clambered back onto my feet, I could see from the opposite side of the opposite direction of the same path two other Germans moving towards me. So I really had no option. I put up my hands, and that was the end of my very disappointing, frustrating end of my active life on behalf of SOE.
What was the aim of the drop? Your mission?
The aim of the drop was to help partisans in that part of the world to delay the expected German retreat once they've crossed the River Po back into Germany, to instruct partisans and supply them with arms and ammunition and explosives, provided they had them, and guide back Allied prisoners of war who were liable to be in that area trying to escape. Well, that was the object, but unfortunately for me it never arose. I was taken prisoner by what turned out to be the Waffen-SS, and there were lots of, funnily enough, I mean, there were lots of Cossacks among them. I realized they were Cossacks because not only did I not understand their language when I could hear them talk from a distance before I was captured, but also because of their Cossack hats and their Cossack sabers, which would look absolutely ludicrous, but they must have been officers, they were carrying these ludicrous sabers. I had with me 500,000 lira, which wasn't a tremendous amount of money, but quite a worthwhile amount. And when I saw that I was in danger of being captured, I dug it into the ground near a place where I would find it again if I'd gone there within a question of days or weeks, perhaps, but certainly not after a month or even after a winter. When I was captured, it was quite near Eleggio, which was the place, incidentally, I had been aiming for, because I simply felt I had to get something to eat somewhere. And I don't know how I would have coped with that situation, because I didn't know whether the inhabitants were friendly towards people like myself or not. But there was little option for me but to proceed towards Eleggio at the time when I was taken prisoner. On in the event, they took me down towards the ledge, and as I was walking along with my hands up, they saw my wristwatch, and they took it off me, of course, and then they went through my pockets and took everything I had, and I was glad I didn't have the half a million lira anymore, because I certainly should have hated to see that fall into the hands of the Germans, or the Cossacks, for that matter. And I felt the Cossacks were worse. It would have been worse for the money to have fallen into the hands of the Cossacks, because to me they were renegades. I felt they should have been fighting on our side and not on the German side. It seemed almost on the spur of the moment they lined me up against sort of a little mound in the field near, quite on the outskirts of Aleggio, and standing around me in the semicircle and cocking their rifles, and I thought this was the end. Then there was a voice shouting an order in German, and an SS Sturmführer, or Waffen SS Sturmführer, approached and gave orders, and they took me into Tolmezzo, where they had their HQ. I can't remember how we went to Tolmezzo. Silly, isn't it? Anyway, I was stripped when I got there, and the interrogation began, and then they decided to send me to a prison. They decided to take me to Udine, where I spent the night in a civilian prison.
Well, what form did the interrogation take?
How long?
Yes, what
it
form?
It was a very superficial interrogation, a sort of a bullying attitude. How the hell dare you be in this part of the world? How do you think you would have got back? Questions like that.
Yes, what did they think you were? You know, did you have a uniform on?
I wore a British uniform, yes.
Mm-hmm. Because obviously you didn't want them to know you were SOE. Is that
I didn't want them to know anything.
Yes.
I wasn't naive enough to believe that they would be satisfied with name, rank, and number.
Mm.
I knew they would be in the interrogation. And what form did it take? What am I doing now? Where do I come from? What was my objective? How do you think you're going to get back? And questions like that. And all very aggressive. I was, of course, dead tired by that time, and I was very hungry. But that was no concern of theirs. Probably if I'd voiced any of expressions to that effect, they would have felt this is just how it ought to be. The worse I felt, I mean, the easier I might have given away something which would have been of interest to them. I spoke German to them, incidentally. I spoke German to them because I felt that I might be interrogated by somebody who had a better command of English than I have. And that would have certainly not been in my favor.
Were these Germans still interrogating you, or were they Italian?
No, they were Germans. They were German, they were SS. I mean, look, in those days, I mean, that part of the country was effectively run by the SS. Of course there were Italian troops, but I mean, by then the Italians had absolutely no standing in the eyes of the Germans. When I arrived in Trieste, and I was interrogated by more skilled interrogators. I mean, they made it clear that the Italians, as far as the conduct of the war in that part of the country, of the world's concerned, were of absolutely no consequence to them. They asked me, they asked the question, how do you think you get back? And I said, well, I had
had some money, and with money you can do anything in Italy. And that they thought was wonderful, and they wholeheartedly agreed with me. I mean, I wasn't trying to play one up against the other. I mean, I was just trying to give a, what seemed to be a plausible explanation. I spent, yes, the, from Tolmezzo I was taken to Udine, and on the way we were stopped a number of times at roadblocks, and in fact we were fired at on two occasions when we left the roadblock, and I could never understand why and how that was possible at all. I arrived late, very late that night in Udine, where I was put in a civilian prison. And in the morning when I woke up, I was given some bread, some black coffee, so-called coffee. And, well, that was the first nourishment I had, other than water, for, well, since I've left Brindisi. I fell asleep the moment my head hit this palliasse. In the morning when I was having my coffee, I started to itch and I discovered I had lice. And I then could see the lice in the seams of the palliasse. I didn't stay long in Udine. They didn't keep me long in Udine. We went on to Trieste. And in Trieste, they took me to the Coroneo, which is a civilian prison, which was staffed by Italians, but run by the Germans. And when I arrived, they weren't quite sure whether I was going to stay there or not. So there were four young subalterns who took me to a restaurant and gave me a meal, which was quite extraordinary. And they obviously wanted to test their English on me. And it was all quite amusing in a way, but frightfully unreal. I mean, it was sort of almost a dreamlike situation. I was then booked into the Coroneo, and I had a cell on the ground floor, which was dingy, and sort of brown, wet walls with water running down the walls. It was really quite awful. And I immediately started to complain about it. And I think it was a couple of days later, they took me to the top floor. And there was a cell which had just been whitewashed. It was really nice and clean and light, as far as a cell can be nice. And I certainly preferred it to the the one with running water from the walls, albeit. The cell was one of a row of, I think, six or eight facing each other across a corridor. At one end was a heavily barred window. At the other end, heavy iron bars with a gate in it. A lockable gate, of course, and that gave out onto a little landing with a spiral staircase which led all the way down. There was one tap near the iron bars at the end of the landing, and that was used by everybody in the morning for ablutions. In the cell, there was a lavatory, and a bunk, and that was it.
This interrogation, you said it was more sort of a fuller interrogation in this area, is that right?
Yes, well, I was then interrogated daily to begin with. I was taken out by car to another building, which was full of SS men. And there were always two present when I was interrogated. There were a minimum of two people. And I always had one of them. I'm sorry, how should I put that? I was interrogated by two people, but there wasn't the same two were not always present. Always one of the two was present. And probably for the sake of continuity or something like that. They were reasonably skilled, but I could sort of field all their questions all right. And in fact, I mean, I sort of chucked my own little bits into the conversation, like I told them that the Tirpitz had been sunk. And that's something they just couldn't believe. And I know, of course I knew it was factually correct, but they just wouldn't believe me. Then I talked about Bailey Bridges, of which they'd never heard. So they gave me paper and pencil and asked me to make drawings. Now I immediately proclaimed that I've got no technical knowledge or whatsoever, but never mind, make your drawings. And so I put in some drawings which were probably largely figments of my own imagination. I knew what the Bailey Bridge looked like, but I mean, that doesn't mean that I can make a technical drawing. The interrogations became less frequent. They became less threatening as time went on. And these lasted about a couple of hours or so, and I was back in my cell, where my prime object was to keep fit as far as I could. And and also alert. It wasn't very easy. I had nothing to read. And one day, as I was walking down to the spiral staircase, there was one inevitably one SS man with a submachine gun on top and one at the bottom, so that you were always in sight. It was a very wide sort of spiral staircase, and they could keep an eye on you. And as I was walking down, up came a sergeant in British uniform, and it turned out to be Charles Barker, who I had not met before, but he introduced himself, and he had been captured together with Bill Smallwood, and he told me that Peter Priestley was always there, also there. Taggart, whom I mentioned earlier on the plane, had been killed, and his Batman, I subsequently found out, got through wherever he was supposed to go. Meeting Charles was fantastic. It was really a fillip to one's morale, or to my morale. And he told me how he and Bill Smallwood had been captured. It was apparently in the same action as in which I was caught, but that only found out later. Bill apparently fell as they were avoiding the Germans and hurt his back and his knee, his leg, and Charles, who was his wireless operator, could have tried to get away, but he didn't. He stayed with Bill. So there were four of us in the Coronel, and one day, it was Mussolini's birthday. That was a great day because, greater than inverted commas, because I was given about 2 square inches of meat in the normal soup we got, which was predominantly water with some spaghetti on the bottom. And when the Italian warders came round, I always indicated to them that I wanted something from the bottom of the cordon because there was more substance to it. And they, by and large, they were obliging because they came all from the south, which had been liberated by then. And I was a representative of the liberators of the south, and they had no quarrel with me. And so they weren't particularly friendly, but they weren't unfriendly, overtly unfriendly either. Apart from that, we got half a mug full of what was called vino con bastone. Apparently that means it is wine which is made with a stick. What is being done is you dissolve, you use the stick to whip up and dissolve in the water some red powder, which then gives you the impression that you're drinking wine. But it didn't worry me. And the other great thing was that I was allowed to go to the infirmaria where Bill Smallwood was kept. He did not receive any treatment, but he was obviously not well and in pain, so they put him into the hospital unit, such as it was, where he had the advantage of being in the company of other people, but certainly no treatment. Lo and behold, as I was sitting there talking to Bill, they brought in Peter Priestley. And so that was an occasion to meet all my British fellow prisoners.